TGIF. It is Friday, December 16th. Hey, everybody, this is Darren Starr, your host of The Drop Set, trainer, owner, coach, etc. at Five Star Physique. Thanks for joining me here today. I appreciate it. So we got some stuff to talk about, a few new topics for today. I do have fun putting these things together because it's basically, you know, it's an exercise in figuring out what I want to talk about. And then, you know, I incorporate a lot of your feedback as well. So please, if you've got ideas for shows, ideas for topics, questions that are maybe, you know, are not yes or no questions, but something worthy of a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 minute answer, something like that, let's, you know, hit me up. You can email me. The address is Darren@fivestarfitness.com. You could also hit me up on Facebook. Just search for Five Star Physique, or on Instagram @fivestarfit. All of those stars are with two R's. So, what's on the agenda for today? So we're going to talk about, we've got a little Q&A, a very brief one, part two of our bodybuilding myths, a slightly different take on it this time. What I'm going to do is actually break down an article I read and talk about some of the things that are just really factually bad in that article. So, and then we've got two main topics for today. The first one, we're going to talk about sleep quality. So sleep, recovery, rest, one of the most underrated aspects of bodybuilding. And then we're also going to talk about my favorite subject, and if you only ever listen to one of these podcast episodes, I hope it's this one. It could potentially change your life, at least as it concerns your training. The word of the day is tension, and how we can apply that to your training sessions. So, what's new this week? You know, this will be short. Nothing is new. I'm continuing to plug away, work with clients, develop new things, try and keep up on social media. That's it. Nothing else really new. I did get a new piece of furniture for the office. I got a digital piano so that I can actually practice in here. I've mentioned before, I'm a musician, I'm in a band, I play piano, I've played for like 25 years, so I am horrible at practicing, though, and currently my main keyboard setup is down in the basement, which is our practice space for the band, and I tell you, I work from home, and it's just so hard for me to go down there. I got to turn everything on, I got to get it all set up, and then it's cold down there. I'm like, ugh. So I actually got a piano and put it in my office because that's where I spend most of the day. So now when I've got, you know, 5 minutes in between clients or whatever, I can go over there and run some stuff, work on some ideas, etc. So if there's anything new this week, that's it. I had to rearrange some furniture. This is a small office, and now it feels even smaller. Anyway, that's it for what's new. I had one question this week, and this is one that comes up a whole lot, and it's probably one of the most overthought and overanalyzed things. You know, there's probably a list of things that could qualify in that discussion, but this is a big one. And the question is, Darren, what is the best time to hit cardio? And my answer for this is very simple. Whatever time lets you get it done is the best time. If I tell you to hit an hour of cardio today, an hour of cardio a day every week, and that it must be fasted or it's worthless, you're going to have a tough time hitting that. You know, a lot of people will. Some people, I can do fasted cardio every day. That's fine. I got that. Some people, because of their schedule, because of their life, because of the way it works, you know, they just can't do fasted cardio realistically. And, you know, part of that could be part excuse. Like you could probably find a way to do it if you wanted to, but at the same time, is it really worth it? If you could much more easily get it done later in the day, is that really such a bad thing? And the answer is no. You know, I've known plenty of people, and I would kind of put myself in this category, who, you know, I can do fasted cardio all day long, but I have a really hard time getting up for it. And I don't mean like waking up for it, but I mean hitting it with a level of intensity that makes it worthwhile, just because I need a little time to wake up. You know, even if I set my alarm and choke down a caffeine pill, hit snooze, and then wake up again 15 minutes later or whatever, it's not the same. Versus if I, you know, wake up normally, go through my morning routine, have a meal, let it sit, do some emails, go hit my lift, and then hit some cardio post-workout or go back later in the day, something like that, it's much more effective for me then. So I can hit it as part of the routine fasted, but that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, I mean, with cardio, Intensity counts to some extent. Now, with fasted steady state cardio, you don't need your heart rate at 170, but for a lot of people, they have a tough time getting it above like 80 or 90, and you got to be a little bit north of that for it to be effective. So the main thing is don't overanalyze it. Get it in when it can fit. What I will say is don't kill yourself with cardio and then try to go do a training session. The training session is the bread and butter of your physical routine. And I would go so far as to say pretty much everything in your day should center around that. You know, if you're a serious bodybuilder, you want your schedule for the day, your meals, everything centers around when you are going to train. And your cardio is part of that too. And by that, I mean you adjust your cardio to accommodate your training schedule and then get cardio in when you can. So there's no real best time to hit it. I would say if you want to make the argument that fasted cardio is more effective, I'd buy into that argument. I think it is, but I think we're talking like, you know, it's 4 or 5% more effective. If we're going to just make up a number and slap it on there, it's worth about that much extra efficiency. It, you know, if you've really got to bend heaven and earth and really, you know, swing some things in order to make fasted cardio worth, I would tell you it's probably not worth it. Your effort would be best spent elsewhere probably. So there you go. That's the Q&A for the week. Just one. So, on to bodybuilding myths. So this is, I was looking through Facebook and I saw bodybuilding.com had posted this article, and I don't want to set a precedent here. You know, this is episode 2 and it's already the second time I've been ragging on bodybuilding.com. Now, they've got some good stuff on their site. They serve a purpose. I do appreciate that. And, you know, anybody from bodybuilding.com who might be listening, thank you. I appreciate your ears here. And at the same time, since I got you here, you need to really work on the quality of writing. I know that you put out a lot of content, but more is not always better. You don't need 10 new articles a day if you just, you know, make the ones that you put up worth a little bit more. So the one that I read here, and this rings true to me because I am currently in, you know, I mentioned before, I don't use the phrase off season. I'm in a growth phase right now. And so if I can change the title of their, well, I won't, just because you might want to search for it. 6 biggest blunders to avoid while trying to add mass off season or in a growth phase. So 6 biggest blunders. So 6 things that you want to avoid. And I'm thinking through, as I'm waiting for the article to load, like, you know, what would my 6 be? I'm like, well, let's just talk about theirs and then see what they are. So blunder number 1 is following a dirty bulk. And the first thing that they open up with here is this is basically the you are what you eat principle, which I think we as bodybuilders, there's been enough progress made in the flexible dieting universe that we can pretty much discount this you are what you eat thing to an extent. There are times when it applies. Like, you know, if you're at 5% body fat and you're trying to get to 4, you probably aren't going to get there eating Cheetos, even if they fit your macros. You know, there comes a point where quality of food matters every bit as much as macronutrient precision, especially when it comes to fat sources, you know, paying attention to glycemic index on carb sources. In the off season, I would say much less so. So a dirty bulk, I mean, you know, there are other points on this list that we'll touch on a little bit more in depth that cover the same territory here. But, you know, a dirty bulk is an untracked bulk. It doesn't necessarily, it shouldn't really be talking about the food selection, but if you're just eating pizza and burgers and you're not tracking or logging everything, that's a crappy bulk. It has nothing to do with the food and just the fact that you're not tracking anything. Blunder number 2, this is my favorite. By favorite, I mean this is the one that I take the most umbrage with. Starting your workouts with the wrong exercises. And it says, quote, if you're a regular on this site, by now we've beaten into your head the importance of doing squats, bench presses, and deadlifts first in your workouts. Let me just stop you right there. That is such a load of dog shit. Just because it is very common to do that, I mean, you know, I believe that they beat that into your head. I'm not disputing that. What I am disputing is that there's not necessarily a tremendous amount of value in doing that. What that's going to let you do is move more weight on those compound exercises because you are fresh. Moving more weight does not mean more muscle growth. And when we get to the second feature in the podcast today, talking about tension, we'll go over that in much greater detail. So I would challenge you instead. I'd be a contrarian here and say, do your squats, do your bench presses, do your deadlifts, do them last in your workout, because by God, growth is about challenging your body and getting it to do things that it doesn't want to do. And if you've never hit squats last in your workout, you effing should. So do it. Hitting them first, there is absolutely no sound fundamental reason in a bodybuilding world to do that, other than it's habit, and a lot of people just do it because it's habit and because, well, I'm trying to squat 405 and there's no way I'm going to do that if it's last in my workout. That's not a valid reason. The weight that you move is irrelevant. So that's blunder number two. Blunder number three, forgetting about total calories. I take some issue with this just because you should be tracking macronutrients, and in so doing, you'll have an idea of where your calories sit. But it's the macros that are really important. As we talked about in the macro episode number two, calories are a derivative number. They are based on the macros. So if you track the macros, which you should, you can't ignore the calories. But they, you know, you'll have a sense of where they should be. So I'm giving them partial credit on that one, but they're kind of, you know, they're kind of aiming for the tree and hit the barn instead. Blunder number four, maxing out all your training variables. You know, this one is very, very individual, because I have seen people that are very serious about their training, very serious about the way they approach dieting, but don't really know how to do it. And they just, you know, to quantify it, they just aren't going hard enough. And that is not somebody that I would say, yeah, stop trying to max out your training variables. I would say, grow a pair, max out your training variables. Come on, do it every day. And then let's see how your body responds, and let's see how your recovery, let's see if your recovery is sufficient to support that. And if not, you know, let's program in some rest days. Let's get in some more food, maybe cut down on cardio a little bit, you know, get more of your effort going into where it matters. But unless you're really advanced and you are able to regularly max out all your training variables routinely because you are a fucking beast in the gym, unless that's you, you should absolutely be trying to max out your training variables. So, overtraining in bodybuilding, you know, it happens, but it's not as common as you think. Just because, think of it this way. With the traditional bodybuilding split, where we hit chest, back, legs, etc., you know, you hit each body part once over the course of a week, just simplifying it for sake of argument here. You hit your back, it's got basically a week to recover before you hit it again. I mean, you can't overtrain a muscle group with a protocol like that. Now, you can overtrain your whole body, but man, you're going to have to be going really hard or going on really low calories or also doing a ton of cardio or just not getting good quality sleep, which we'll be talking about shortly, in order to make that happen. So I would say for most people out there, especially beginners, you should certainly be trying to max out your training variables. Blunder number five, failing to keep track. I mean, I agree with that one. Absolutely. They talk about it more in the sense of lifting. So keeping a workout log. I think there's some value in that, but as we will talk about when it comes to tension, workout logs are only going to take you so far. I think you should track that stuff, but it is not the definitive final word on how you're progressing. So, more important to track macronutrients. Absolutely. You've got to track those. And if you don't, you really don't know what you're doing. And by that, I don't mean like you're an idiot. I mean, you don't know what's happening. You don't know, you know, you don't have a log of what you're putting in your body. So you don't have any way to have a reasonable expectation for what's happening, what's coming out, what's going on the result side of the equation. And then number six is failing to account for recovery. I agree with that completely. They talk about things like, you know, stretching, making sure you're eating enough, which is good. You know, they of course are pushing supplements here too. Foam rollers, massage, etc. Those are all good. I don't take umbrage with any of those. I think recovery is important. And you know, the next topic that we're going to talk about is sleep. And you know, I think that it's really, really underrated how we approach that. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that article to your attention, talk about it, and you know, give a chance for me to pontificate a little bit, which is something that I certainly enjoy doing. So that's that. Those are the bodybuilding myths for the week. A couple of decent ones in there, but some that I really, really take exception with. So moving right on. So the next thing that I wanted to discuss is something near and dear to my heart, which is sleep quality. Now, let me tell you, I love me some sleep. Man, I feel like sleep is one of the greatest gifts we've been given. I love sleeping. So, as we know, I mean, the cliche is, you don't build muscle in the gym, you build muscle when you're out of the gym, when you're recovering, specifically when you're sleeping. Your body needs that downtime to, effectively be able to process what happened. Think about, wait, what just happened to me? That's where it gets a chance to kind of wrap its head around what went on, rebuild the muscle tissue, get nutrients in there. It happens anytime you're at rest, but the deeper rest state you can get into, the more efficient, the more effective it will be. So, the first thing that I would do is when it comes to starting the discussion, is encourage you to put yourself into one of two categories. We're going to kind of make this a binary thing. So you're either going to be, the red pill or the blue pill here. Good sleepers versus bad sleepers. So, good sleepers meaning like, you can get to sleep, and when you're asleep, you're out. And if you wake up for whatever reason, no big deal, you can get right back to sleep. Awesome. This is going to be pretty easy for you. I would go so far as to say you can skip ahead, let's call it 10 minutes, and we'll talk about tension. I'll see you on the other side. You are somebody, just based on your quality of sleep, your recovery will be better. Typically, I would say you can probably get away with fewer days off. You don't need as much recovery time out of the gym just because quality of sleep matters so much. So the question then becomes, how can we help move somebody from one category to the other, from the bad sleeper into the good sleeper category? So there's a couple things to consider here, and it's how easily you can get to sleep, and then what we could do about the quality of your sleep once you're actually out. So when it comes to getting to sleep, there's some do's and don'ts. So the do's would be, do be active during the day. Give your body a reason to feel like it needs to rest, other than just it's dark outside, because that ain't gonna cut it. And you need to give your body enough on the output side of things so that it feels like eventually it's got to shut down. So the more active you are during the day, as long as you provide yourself a little bit of a wind down time, you're going to find that it's easier to get to sleep, obviously. If you work out at night, and if you are caffeine sensitive, I would avoid a pre-workout, or go with a pre-workout that is caffeine or stimulant free. Just because that, for many people, if they have any caffeine after like noon, bad news bears. That's not going to be a good thing. So, understand your caffeine sensitivity and how much it impacts you. I could just take a pre-workout shot at 9:30 p.m. and be asleep and in bed at 10. I don't routinely do that, but I am not terribly caffeine sensitive, so I don't have any issues with that. Other things that you can do to help yourself get to sleep is, make sure that you set things up. This is going to sound like an interior decorating podcast now. Set your bedroom up in such a way that is conducive to sleep. So, this is going to sound really silly, but clean it. Make your bed. I mean, stupid shit like that makes a difference. The routine of crawling into what feels like a freshly made bed is something that's gonna help signal to your body, hey, it's sleepy time. All right. Versus if you just got a bunch of shit on your bed and you've got to throw it onto the floor to crawl in, it's not the same thing. And these are things that under normal circumstances I would say, yeah, they are pretty silly. But if you're listening to this intently, it's likely because you've got some issues in this regard. So it makes sense to apply some extra things to it to try and fix it, because it's important and it's worth fixing. So set the room up in such a way that it's conducive to sleep. So clean it, make the bed, pay attention to lighting. For a lot of people, it's got to be pitch black. For other people, having a small nightlight on can help. A colored LED bulb, especially set to a cool color like blue or purple, can help for some people. Those are things to consider at least. You can do a little bit of additional research on that as well. There's been articles written on how light can affect your ability to get to sleep. Screens, so your phone, your iPad, your Kindle. If you are struggling to get to sleep, I would kind of put a bedtime on those devices that is a fair bit earlier than when you plan on going to sleep. So get yourself into a routine where you're like, okay, I want to be in bed by 10, so all screens are off by 9, they're plugged into the charger, they're done for the day. And then at that point, you can read an actual book or a magazine or something like that. You can listen to music, you can listen to a meditation, anything like that. You know, the idea here, again, being that we want to establish a routine that is signaling to the body to help itself shut down. I would also avoid a lot of water right before bed, obviously, because if you have a hard time getting to sleep, if you wake up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, you're going to have to play this game all over again, most likely. So we want to avoid that. So, you know, as bodybuilders, we tend to drink a lot of water. I would absolutely front load that earlier in the day. If you work out later in the day, the one thing I would say is if you're a light sleeper, you have a tough time getting to sleep, and you work out at night, I'd say that's probably a bad idea. Everybody's a little bit different on this. Like, some people, they'll go to the gym, they'll work really hard, and that actually helps them get to sleep. More often than not, you get really wired, and you then have a tough time getting to sleep. So if sleep is something you struggle with, working out earlier in the day, even if it makes, you know, a little bit of a, even if it makes it a little difficult to, adjust the routine around that, it might be worth it. It's worth investigating at least and thinking about. So avoiding water, with the one exception of, you know, having a cup of tea, especially like a sleepy time tea variety, before bed can really help. It's something that definitely calms the body down. There are a couple of things on the supplement side as well that can help with this as well. You know, melatonin is the one thing that everybody knows about. You know, it's a sleep aid. I don't like to rely on things like that, but at the same time, if you struggle getting to sleep, boy, it might be worth it. Something, a more natural alternative, something like valerian root, can be extremely helpful. That might be worth looking into. So that's, you know, helping get to sleep. Now, once we're asleep, how do we improve the quality of sleep? How do we get to a deeper sleep? And part of it is, you know, if you can fall asleep faster, you give your body a little bit more, a little bit of a head start as far as getting into a deeper quality of sleep. So that will certainly help. You know, all the things that we just discussed, they will help get you into a deeper sleep as well. On the supplement side of things, something like ZMA, which is just a mixture of zinc, magnesium, and vitamin B6, can certainly help promote a deeper quality of sleep. The other thing that you can do is, you know, in this day and age, it's 2016 going on 2017, you can actually quantify your sleep. If you've got an Apple Watch, for example, there is a sleep app built into that that will track how much time you actually spend asleep, you know, deep sleep, light sleep, awake, and then it will give you a sleep score as well. So you can not just base it on, oh, this is how I feel when I wake up in the morning, but you can actually get a number and say, oh, I slept really well, or wow, I didn't. What was different about the day before? You know, what might be lacking in my routine? Did I do anything different? Or is there just something that's, you know, did I spend a lot of time trying to doze off, or was I, you know, out and then up and then out and then up and then out and then up all through the night? So it can be a starting point for some troubleshooting. So worth looking into there. There are apps on your phone that you can get. Other fitness trackers that you wear can provide that kind of feedback for you as well. And finally, one other thing to consider would be something like, you know, this is something that a lot of people find very helpful is some kind of a noise generator. So this is especially helpful if you sleep with other people in the house that maybe, you know, aren't quite so caring about your difficulties, or, you know, if you live in an apartment complex and there's people all around you and you could be fine, and then suddenly someone comes trudging up the stairs outside your place and you're like, what the fuck? You know, a noise generator. So this could be white noise. It could be something like, you know, ocean waves. It could be, you know, crickets chirping or whatever. All kinds of apps on a smartphone that you can get as noise generators that would provide something like that. A lot of people find that just very calming and very soothing in general. And especially it can help, you know, filter out some of the less predictable noise by giving your ears something in a nearer focus and something more predictable and as a pattern to kind of focus on instead. So Hopefully some or all of that stuff, when put together, can kind of help you get things moving in the right direction. If sleep is something that you struggle with, the big thing is to understand that it is worth the time that you spend trying to improve it. You will absolutely reap the benefits of that many times over. Because if you can take yourself from somebody who's like, I struggle to get 4 or 5 hours of quality sleep, to, you know, I can actually, in the same amount of time, get a solid 7 hours, that is going to do wonders for your recovery. So it's absolutely worth the time to spend on that to improve it. All right, moving on. The second subject that I wanted to discuss, the large subject, this is probably my favorite thing in the world to talk about because I have such incredibly strong opinions on it. So this is, the name of this discussion will be Tension Part 1. I say that just because I know we will not cover all of it today, and it's going to be worth revisiting. I could probably talk about tension to some degree in every episode of this podcast going forward. Spoiler alert, I will really try not to do that because I know it will get really boring if I do that all the time. So, what is the concept? The concept is that muscular tension is what causes a muscle to growth. So what you want to do, the idea behind training is not to lift weights. The idea behind training is to work the muscle. Now, that is such an unbelievably important concept, simple yet very difficult to grasp in execution. I want to say it again. The goal is not to lift weights. The goal is to work the muscle. And if you've ever watched people in the gym that obviously have no clue what they're doing, you know that they do not understand that concept, because it's all about lifting as much as they possibly can, regardless of what the form looks like, at the expense of every last bit of tension in the muscle. So what this means is, you know, a muscle is designed to do a certain job. And throughout this, I'm probably going to continue to fall back on the example of the bicep just because it's something that's really easy to grasp and we all know how a bicep works. A bicep is responsible for flexing the elbow, so causing the angle at the elbow to decrease. So a fully extended elbow is at a 180 degree angle. Maybe a little bit more, maybe 190 for some people that are double jointed. And then we can get that to something, you know, depends on your physiology a little bit. You might be able to flex that down to, you know, 20 degrees, 25 degrees. If you've got giant guns, maybe you're going to top out at like 35 degrees or something like that. Who knows? So the idea is that the bicep is responsible for causing that angle to decrease. And as it does that, it shortens. So when the elbow is fully extended, when it's straight, the bicep is as long as it can be. So it's being stretched. When the elbow is flexed as much, so think the top of a bicep curl, the bicep is as short as it can be. So your goal I would say most every exercise is to take a muscle from its longest position to its shortest position. And while it's in the shortest position, you want to contract the hell out of it. You want to squeeze it like it owes you money, and force blood into the muscle, and force a pump. I'll use myself as an example because I'm not too proud. So I'm not the strongest guy in the world. So I go and I do some barbell bicep curls and I work up and I'm like doing, you know, whatever on a good day, maybe 110, 115, maybe 120, something like that. The problem is when I do that, my form kind of breaks down a little bit. And invariably, I start to feel it in the shoulders. My elbows might feel a little bit of strain and stress. I have actually, when I was much younger, I tweaked my lower back doing bicep curls. So that's some bad form for you right there. All of those things are a sign that you are focusing on lifting the weight and you're not focusing on contracting and working the bicep. So what you want to do is use a weight where your bicep is responsible for 100% of the movement of that weight. Anything else needs to be classified as a compensation. Any kind of momentum, any kind of swinging, any kind of assist from the shoulder, any inability to maintain a slow and steady pace. What I would say is that you should be able to demonstrate such control over the weight that you're moving that if I was standing behind you with a whistle or an air horn, I could blow it at any point and you'd be able to stop the rep wherever I blow that thing and control the weight there. Maybe not forever, but until I tell you to go again in a second or two. So being able to do an automatic pause anywhere in the rep and demonstrate that control of it, if you're able to do that, that tells me that the muscle is working. If you can't sustain a negative, if you've got to use momentum to get a concentric, if you can't pause on the isometric, the point of contraction, and squeeze the muscle deliberately for a little added oomph, you're not controlling the weight. And you've got to control the weight. So the muscle has to control it. Now, what this means, and this is kind of a leap of faith, and when I start working with a new client, there is always some skepticism on this because they're coming from, you know, whatever background they come from. Maybe it's, you know, a fairly uneducated background. They don't have a lot of experience doing this. Maybe they come from powerlifting or who knows. Maybe they've been trying to build, but they're like, you know, my gains have just stopped. I've plateaued. And what I tell them is your numbers, as far as the weights that you move, they are almost completely and totally irrelevant. So I get a lot of questions from people. How much should I lift on this? Well, first of all, it's an impossible question to answer just because everybody's strength is different. I could say, oh, you should do 25 pounds on that. Okay, well, I can't lift 25 pounds on that. Okay, well, you're just obviously not strong enough. I mean, that's stupid. That there's nothing valid about that. So what I always tell people, and this generates a lot more work for me, but it's worth it, is the only way that I can tell you if a weight is appropriate or not is if I watch you lift it. So record a video, send it over to me, and let's break it down. Let's talk about your mechanics. Let's talk about your pace. Let's talk about your control. Let's talk about your focus. And then we'll see how appropriate that weight may or may not be. So the number's mostly irrelevant. Now, if you are a big dude and you're going to go and tell me that you are getting an effective workout from bench pressing a 45-pound bar, I'm going to tell you you're probably full of it. You know, there's a certain point where there has to be enough weight to generate the kind of stimulus that we want. You know, you can't just push against air necessarily. I mean, there is a school of thought, and I employ this sometimes, especially if I've got a joint that's acting up, where I'm going to go and say, I want to lift as little weight as I possibly can and still get a pump. That's actually a great challenge to place upon yourself, because the only way that can happen is if you have excellent mind-muscle control and you've got really good body coordination. So that is not a horrible thing to try and focus on. I wouldn't necessarily make that the staple of your training program, though. So numbers largely irrelevant, but there is a reason why they're not. And this was alluded to in the breakdown of the bodybuilding.com article before, where they said track everything, and they were talking about weights, really. You can track your weights, but that doesn't really... it doesn't really do any justice to the actual execution of the exercise. So case in point, I can go and I can curl 115 pounds for 8 reps, and it can be, you know, very mediocre, or I can drop that weight down to maybe 75, slow it way down, hit the same number of reps in a set that takes twice as long because I'm taking that much more time on each rep. I'm holding a 3-second concentric squeeze, and those sets are going to have very, very different impacts on your physique and your ability to grow. One is going to cause you to plateau. It puts you at a greater risk for injury, and it is inefficient in building muscle. That's the heavy route. The other one is much more likely to promote your longevity in bodybuilding by keeping you injury free because you're using a moderate weight and you are controlling the hell out of it, and you're creating as much tension in the muscle as you possibly can. So one of them, I will go ahead and say this, one of those is correct, one of those is not. Going as heavy as you can on everything is just not correct. Now, you will get a certain level of growth, you will get a certain level of response from your body by lifting heavy up to a point. You know, if you've known somebody who just started going to the gym, they just started lifting, they can go in and pretty much do anything, and they're going to put on a little bit of muscle just because, you know, it's new to their body. They haven't done this before, so they're going to get those, you know, we call them newbie gains, where, you know, pretty much anything that you do is going to help you grow. The problem with that is then you're thinking, hey, this is working. And so you keep doing it when realistically it was just the fact that you were doing anything that is what helped you grow. And then what you've got to do is realize that what you were doing initially with your bad form and your crappy lifting was not the reason that you were growing. And then you've got to figure out how to do it correctly. And that is the difficult thing. But with your numbers, the reason why people fixate on those is because it's really easy to track. You do a workout log, you just write down your number, and you move on, you do your next set. But as we've discussed, there's so much more to it than that. So what I would recommend instead is track your weights, because I think it's important to, you know, keep a base of information. But then don't be afraid to put some notes in the margin, like went really slow, long squeeze, really bled out the negative, you know, whatever it is, just so that you know when you come back the next time, like, wow, I only did 60 pounds on the lift. What was I thinking? I can do more than that. Oh, I held a 4-second isometric squeeze there. That's why. Okay, I got it. And then make comments like, you know, don't be afraid to rate a set when you're done with it. Like, you know, you can lift a ton of weight, and, you know, complete the set, hit your rep target, and then, you know, kind of stretch things out in between sets and say, yeah, I moved the weight, but I didn't really get the muscle fatigue. Like, my heart rate's up and I'm sweating, but I'm not feeling that in the target muscle nearly as much. And don't be afraid to adjust weights and adjust your tempo, you know, in the middle of a workout if you're not in the place where you need to be. When you are there, you will know it. When it feels like your skin is getting stretched out because the muscle is swelling under there because you've got all that blood in there from the pump just from maintaining that tension, that's how you know you're in the zone. That's what we're looking for. So anything that we can do to keep things progressing in that direction and maximizing that each time out, that's the goal. So the goal of bodybuilding is progressive overload. And there is a point where, you know, if you're just tracking weight, you're like, okay, I can curl 110 pounds. Okay, maybe I can curl 115. I'm going to try 120. Okay, that didn't work. And eventually you're like, okay, I can't go up anywhere from here. So what do? I'm not overloading anymore. So am I just done? My biceps aren't going to grow anymore. That's why we need more variables. So pace, quality of execution, all that stuff is really critical. So being able to track your weight is good, and that's a good starting point, but the reality of muscle growth is that it's much more complex than that. So how is muscle built, basically? It can be distilled down into a very simple description. You build a muscle by making it do more work than it really should be capable of doing. So you've got to overload it. You've got to, first of all, figure out how to work the muscle. Like, you can do a bicep curl, but, you know, are you really working the bicep? That's what we're looking for here. So, you know, make sure that you slow it down, make sure that you control it, make sure that it's a moderate enough weight that you're able to feel it. You're able to work that isometric, and make sure that you're working that muscle. And now what we want to do is overload it, which means, great, we're picking a weight and we're going to hit that for 8 to 12 reps, something in there. So always give yourself a range to play with. And let's say you do set one, you hit 12 reps. Great. All right. Good. Nice job. So at this point, now the goal should be to keep all those variables the same. Keep that pace of repetition the same, the quality of contraction the same. Don't lose the mind-muscle connection. You know, keep that same isometric squeeze in place. Now, let's add a little bit of weight on there. You know, we've got a range of reps that we're looking for, 8 to 12. We hit the high end. Let's see if we can add a little bit of weight to get to the point where we're failing closer to the low end. So we go up on 5 pounds. Great. Okay, well, that time I got 9. All right, cool. Cool. There's nothing wrong with that. And so, you know, we're still looking for 8 to 12. So, you know, boy, can we go up another 5? I don't know. It kind of depends. It's a judgment call. If you go up another 5, you might not hit 8, which wouldn't be the end of the world. That's okay. As long as they're all quality reps and you hit 6 or 7, that's okay. You know, make a note of that. Overshot it a little bit, so next time you'll know. Or you can leave it at the same range, and you got 9 the last set. And what I would say is, if you keep the weight the same, do your next set. And if you're able to get 9, great. Force a 10th rep. Force an 11th rep. And this is what I call gun to your head lifting. So lift like you've got a gun to your head and that your life depends on it, because those life depends on it reps are the ones that make the muscle grow. You know, if you've got to put a really fine point on it, that's what it is. Those reps where your body is just begging and screaming for you to stop because of, you know, that the, you know, we'll call it lactic acid buildup. It's more complex than that, but we'll call it that, that burning in the muscle. That is your body telling you to stop. And growth is determined by your ability to push beyond that feeling. Ignore it, shut it out, and keep going anyway. And keeping those reps slow and controlled and turning them into shit reps isn't going to do the trick. You know, you're getting a little bit more. I mean, you're still making the muscle do a little bit more work than it wants, but it's not as much as if you were getting quality reps out of it still. So the weight is just a tool. And so just like when building a house, you have to understand how the thing is constructed. You have to understand, you know, what a stud does, what a header does, what a sill plate does. You have to understand what all those things are, and you have to have the right nails. And if you can have the biggest and fanciest hammer in the world, but if you don't have the right nails and, you know, your walls aren't constructed in the right way, it ain't going to matter. You know, the fanciest $200 hammer in the world isn't going to get the job done if nothing else is there. So the weight is just a tool. The muscle is what you really need to be concerned about. And so when you go in to a lifting session, you've got to understand that focusing on how the muscle feels is your priority numbers 1, 2, and 3. That is it. Anything that you can do to accentuate the feeling that you get from that muscle and the connection that you have mentally with its ability to contract, to lengthen, to shorten, that's where your focus needs to be. And understanding your body mechanics. So we talked about, okay, elbows or the bicep is responsible for elbow flexion. Well, the tricep is responsible for elbow extension. So, you know, when you want to try and make that muscle as short and as long as it can be. So on the negative for, like, let's talk about a straight bar press down or something like that, you want to get the smallest angle in the elbow you possibly can on that negative to really stretch that tricep out. And then when you push down, extend the elbow, focus on what the tricep is doing, you know, aim to feel it. And then when you lock out that elbow, squeeze the hell out of that sucker like you're trying to get it to cramp up. When you're doing leg extensions, the same thing. Keep yourself pulled into that seat so that you're not cheating yourself out of potential range of motion there. More complex things like a squat, you know, you've got multiple muscle groups going there. Some are lengthening, some are shortening. So, you know, it's a much more complex discussion figuring out, you know, how to maximize what you get out of a squat. Same thing with like a deadlift. You know, a bench press is a little bit more simple, but, you know, it's a much easier point to drive home on isolation exercises. So absolutely focus on that. Think about, you've got to know what the muscle feels like when it's working. So that brings us to the final section here, which is how to proceed. How do we go from here? So how do I know when the muscle's working? Well, number one is practice your isometrics. So you're sitting in your chair right now or whatever. Maybe you're listening to this while you're doing some cardio. You're walking on the treadmill. Great. Flex your elbow like you just finished a bicep curl. Hold it there. And now squeeze. Squeeze the bicep. Squeeze. And just hold it. Just hold it. I'll wait. Don't worry. I'm not going anywhere. Just hold it. Hold it. Are you feeling anything yet? You should be by now. You know, maybe it's not brutal pain, but you should be feeling something by now. Okay, now straighten it out. Straighten the elbows out. Now flex again. So you've allowed it to stretch. Now ball it up again. Squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. Squeeze like a mother. Squeeze like it owes you money. What you're looking for is that feeling where it's like, okay, my bicep is about to cramp up. And as soon as you start to feel that, great. Stretch it out and then bring it right back in again. Hold it, hold it, hold it. Squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. So every muscle in the body can be worked in an isometric fashion like this. So understanding how to engage the muscle via isometrics is step number one. So if you go in and you're going to, like, I'm going to do arms. Great. Part of your warm-up should be, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of doing isometrics for your biceps and triceps, just to make sure that you're fully engaged. It's going to help start a pump. It's going to get a little bit of blood flow in there as well. So it's a great way to start a workout. So I would start with that. The next thing, you know, I talked about this before, is, you know, you want to track your programming variables in your workout log, but also track your feel. So, you know, don't be afraid to rate sets or put in comments about, like, man, that was awesome. And also, you can train by feel to some extent. You know, we've all had that moment in a workout where you're going, it's like, okay, this is a good workout. And then you hit one of those sets and for some reason something clicks and you go into beast mode and it's like something about this exercise, I'm just absolutely crushing it. I feel this for some reason right now. My goal was 8 to 12 reps and I just hit 17 and I've never lifted that weight for that many reps before. It was quality. It feels amazing. The mind-muscle connection is through the roof. Awesome. Stay there and do it again and do it again. You know, when you get something like that, ride that wave. That is a feeling that can be difficult to come by for a lot of people. So hammering a couple extra sets or really identifying when you can squeeze out those reps, do it. Absolutely. And the last thing that I want to leave you with here is the thought that bodybuilding is hard. And I don't just mean that, you know, it's difficult to follow a diet and do the cardio and all this crap and everything. I mean, that's hard enough. But bodybuilding requires a mastery of your body and how to manipulate it, and not just with regards to posing, but also with training. So the big thing to understand is that every exercise you can do in the gym is a skill. And like all skills, the more you perform them and the more you perform them with a focus on improving your skill at that, the better you will get at it. And so the goal is to get better at training. And that's all there is to it. So, you know, you can say, oh, well, it's a bicep curl. How effing hard can that be? It can be hard for some people. You know, it's all about your body coordination, how comfortable you are with it, how much you understand how to manipulate the muscle and how to make it work. So there is no way that you can overdevelop your skills in that regard. So you go into a workout and it's a chest workout. You've got five exercises. Great. That's five completely different skills that you need to figure out. And maybe you're doing a barbell flat bench press and an incline dumbbell bench press. Okay. Well, those movements are pretty similar. They're two different skills. The change in angle, the change in equipment that you're using, everything makes those different. So what you want to do, the goal on those under this example should be, how can I maximize the recruitment that I get from my pecs on these movements? How can I identify ways in which the rest of my body is compensating to help move this? Like if you're doing a wicked bridge when you're doing a flat bench press, like your glutes come up off the bench, it's a good sign that, you know, you're using some muscle groups besides just your pecs. So keep your ass on the bench. Don't focus on pushing the weight, but focus on activating the muscle if you want it to grow. How can I maximize the way it works? And then how can I squeeze extra reps out of this? How can I milk a little extra performance out of my body when it's begging me to stop? And there are certain moves where it might not be a good idea. Like, you know, if you don't have a spotter, trying to go for that sixth rep on a bench when you've hit five and that fifth one was already pretty dicey, cut your losses. You know, I mean, graduate, go to the Smith machine if you want to, because then you can, you know, again, that's a separate exercise still. Even, you know, barbell flat bench, Smith machine flat bench, different exercises, just because the amount of control that's required is different between the two. So you want to push the envelope and try and get some extra reps. Make sure it's an exercise where you can do it safely and you're not going to kill yourself. So I think that's about it. So again, this is part one of tension. And my hope is that this will either A, spark some further discussion, talk to your friends about it, but take some of this to the gym with you and try it. Think about the isometrics. Think about this concept of skill development as it relates to every exercise in the gym and what you're doing during each section to improve those skills. And it does require a lot of thought. You know, you've got to concentrate, you've got to focus, you've got to pay attention to what you're doing. So focus on that. If you've got follow-up questions, hit me up. Like I said, you can find me, you can email me, Darren@5starfitness.com, on Facebook, search 5-Star Physique, Instagram @5starfit, or on the website, 5starphysique.com. So until next week, I thank you very much for listening. I hope this was enjoyable and that you learned something, and I look forward to having you tune in next week.